This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
We will call the South Dakota State Emergency Response Commission meeting of March 30th, 2021 to order. I'd like to start by reading an announcement to all of our attendees, board members, and online listeners. I would like to welcome everyone participating in today's meeting or listening online. This meeting is streaming live on SD.net, a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. For the benefit of our online listeners, I request that all participants please identify themselves when speaking during the meeting. Participants should also remember to unmute their microphones only when speaking. The meeting is also being recorded, and the audio will be made available online following the meeting. To find the audio recording online, do a web search for South Dakota Boards and Commissions Portal. Follow the link and select the name of the board, which in this case would be the State Emergency Response Commission. With that, can we please start with introductions, and we'll do introductions and then follow that with a roll call of members. So first, who do we have that's called in? Have any of our partners on the line that aren't commission members?
Hi, Bree Boxdollar from EPA.
Hey, Bree.
Brenda Santigada.
I think somebody from CISA, but I missed the name.
Sorry, it's Fran Santigada from CISA, Fran. The CFAS program.
Yep.
Mark Quick from EPA.
Morning, Mark. Anyone else? All right, can we move on to a roll call of board members, please?
Here.
Leash?
Here.
McIntosh?
Here.
Pitts?
Here.
Kruger?
Here.
Kitsy?
Here.
Willett?
Here.
And Hinkle?
Here.
Thank you. It sounds like we have a quorum. Moving on to item three on our agenda, approval of the December 21, 2020 CERC meeting minutes. If everybody has had a chance to review those, Kelsey sent those out. Thank you very much. So if we've all had a chance to look at those and review those, the board would accept, or the chair would accept a motion.
Motion to approve, McIntosh.
Second, Lee.
I have a motion by McIntosh, a second by Leash for approval of the meeting minutes. Can we please have a roll call vote?
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leash?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Kruger?
Aye.
Jitsi?
Aye.
And Willett?
Aye.
And Hinkle?
Aye.
All right, motion is approved. Moving on to number four, some important work today with the CERC, and I'd just like to start by thanking Kelsey and Kim and Trish and everyone else at DENR has put a lot of time and effort into this. Obviously, we had some challenges to overcome for these grants this year, but I will turn this over to Kelsey for our LEPC grant applications.
Thanks, Dustin. So normally we would have voted on the grants at our last meeting. However, it was brought to our attention that several counties had missed at least one of the quarter for their meeting dates. So we held off on the voting because we had asked Governor Noem for an executive order to allow those LEPCs that had missed a quarterly meetings, but to continue to meet after. The executive order was signed by Governor Noem on January 7th. Executive Order 2021-01 suspends the statutory provision requiring that a meeting be held at least once per quarter for local emergency planning committees that continue to hold public meetings, but whose meetings did not fall within four separate quarters in a calendar year of 2020. So with that executive order, this allowed the counties to still apply for the grant. I did send out the grants to everyone last week, and nothing has changed since I sent them. This year, we had $37,167.55 available for the LEPC grants. We did receive applications from 35 LEPCs this year. I did review all the applications, and if the information was missing or appeared to be wrong, I contacted the LEPCs and tried to gather the correct or missing information. There was a lot of extra information trying to be gathered this year as people were trying to make up for a quarter that they missed for their meetings. Of the 35 counties that applied, I recommended approval for 33 counties and denial for two. The two counties that I do not recommend a grant for are Aurora and Hanson County. Aurora County did not have the meetings as the new EM did not know he was supposed to have meetings. They did reach out to us and they said that their LEPC was going to go inactive because they could not get members for their LEPC right now. The new EM is going to try to get more members and hopefully become active as soon as they can get those members. And the same goes for Hanson County, as they did go through an EM switch. They also didn't have an EM for a while. So when he took over, he was not aware of the meetings until I sent out the grant application packet. Based on that information in the executive order, I did not believe they fit within the exception of the executive order to get that grant. So based on that information, I ask that the CERC votes on the approval and denial of the grants. And since Becky and Dustin, since you guys are on your county LEPCs, I would ask that we do a separate vote for those counties. However, I believe we should be able to vote on those other grants.
Thank you very much, Kelsey. First of all, any questions from the board for Kelsey on this? Hearing none, the chair will accept a motion for the two. Let's start with the denials, Aurora and Hanson County. The board will entertain a motion on the status of those two.
Titsy, you'll move on that.
And is that for denial, Tina?
Correct.
McIntosh, second.
The motion by Titsy, second by McIntosh for denial of Aurora and Hanson County. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call vote, please.
Humphrey? Aye.
Leash?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Sugar?
Aye.
Gypsy?
Aye.
Willett?
Aye.
Nicole?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. The chair will now entertain a motion for approval of all the counties with the exception of Pennington, and I apologize. What's the other county?
Davidson.
So the chair will entertain a motion for the status of the other counties with the exception of Pennington and
Davidson,
thank you.
This is Leash. I move to approve as stated.
Pitsy, a second.
All right, I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
This is Doug Hinkle with State Fire Marshal's Office.
Just want to double check because I'm a member of the Hughes County LEPC also. I just wanted to make sure. I don't think Hughes County put in an application, did they?
They did not.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't a conflict of interest there.
Thank you, Doug. Any other comments? Hearing none, the board will entertain a motion. Or the chair will entertain a motion. All right. I apologize. I need to get myself straight here. We have a first. We have a second. No more further comments. Roll call vote, please.
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leach?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Kruger?
Aye.
Jitsi?
Aye.
Willett?
Aye.
Hinkle?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. We'll move on to the approval of Davison County, or the status of Davison County. And Becky, I would assume that you'll abstain from this one.
Yes, you're right.
So the chair will entertain a motion.
So move McIntosh for the approval of Davison LEPC grant.
Have a second.
Hinkle second.
McIntosh move, Hinkle second for approval of Davidson County. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call vote, please.
Humphrey?
Aye.
Lee?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Kruger?
Aye.
Jitsi?
Aye.
Willett?
Aye.
Hinkle?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. Moving on to Pennington, and I'll be abstaining from this vote, but the we'll entertain a motion for the status of Pennington's grant.
Hinkle, motion to approve.
I'll make the motion.
So can I say a motion by Becky, second by Doug?
Sounds good.
All right.
Hinkle.
Any further discussion? All right, roll call vote, please.
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leach?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Kruger?
Aye.
Jitsi?
Aye.
Hinkle?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. Thank you all. Kelsey, is there anything else we need for the item four grant applications?
I believe that is it.
Awesome. Thank you all very much. That's been a little while in coming, and that's a good deal, so thank you. Moving on to five, again, this will be Kelsey with the LAPC roster review and appointments.
So I did send out all of those rosters to everybody. The only one that we did get in since I sent that out is Gregory County. So we have 60 designated LEPCs in South Dakota. Most of them are getting back to their regularly scheduled meetings after COVID. Last week, the CERC members were sent the copies. We had 49 submittals for LEPCs. There were 7 LEPCs that did not submit a roster. Those counties are Aurora, Falk, Hawken, Jackson, Lyman, Oglala, Lakota, and Sanborn. These counties are not very active. And as I mentioned earlier, Aurora County is going inactive until they can get more members. We had three counties that have not submitted yet because their meetings will be in the next couple weeks. Those counties include Edmonds, Hyde, and Kingsbury. I will be in contact with Union County when a new EM is announced, since they are currently with an interim EM until they can find a new one. The remaining LEPCs have submitted rosters for the CERC review and approval. Some of these counties are not able to fill all of the sectors in their rosters because they are very rural counties and do not have some of those sectors. So now I will ask the CERC to do three things. Review the 49 LEPC rosters provided and a vote to either approve, revise, or deny the LEPC membership. The second is that the CERC will agree to wait until the June meeting for the roster review and approval for Edmonds, Hyde, Kingsbury, and Union counties. And then finally, when it comes to the counties that are not going to have LEPCs, I ask the CERC to consider appointing individuals to serve as the LEPC. So that would include the emergency manager, state's attorney, sheriff, and county commission to serve as their LEPCs.
Thank you very much, Kelsey. Any questions? Actually, we'll just deal with questions as we move through the motions. So let's start with the 49 who have turned in rosters and that Kelsey has reviewed. So the chair will entertain a motion on the 49 submissions.
So move, McIntosh.
Second, Leash.
Second, Tensi.
All right, I've got a motion and a second. Any further discussion on the 49 approvals? Hearing none, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leash?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Kruger?
Aye.
Tinsy?
Aye.
Willett?
Aye.
Hinkle?
Aye.
All right, motion approves for those 49 submissions. We'll move on to the delay. Basically, we'll hold off until June for Edmond, Hyde, Union, and Kingsbury. The chair will entertain a motion.
So move, Hinkle.
Second, Humphrey.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on the delay for those counties? Hearing none, roll call vote, please.
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leash?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Kruger?
Aye.
Tinsy?
Aye.
Willett?
Aye.
Hinkle?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you. And then our final one will be to appoint the statutory members that we have in law for those counties that don't have approved rosters. The chair will entertain a motion on those remaining counties and those appointments. Do we have a motion?
Pitts, make a motion.
Second.
Okay, so I've got a motion and a second to appoint the positions according to state law for the remaining counties. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call vote.
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leash?
Aye.
McIntosh?
Aye.
Pitts?
Aye.
Kruger?
Aye.
Tinsy?
Aye.
Willett?
Aye.
Hinkle?
Aye.
Motion passes. Anything else on item 5, Kelsey?
That should be it.
And again, before we move on, I just wanted to, again, thank the staff at DE&R, Kelsey and Trish and Kim, for doing all the heavy lifting with this. Thank you very much, Kelsey. And this is, again, some of the really good work that this commission does. So thank you. Moving on to federal updates. We have both Bree and Mark from the EPA. Do you both have report outs or one or the other?
I'll go ahead and report out, and if there's anything that Mark wants to add to that, certainly feel free to jump in, Mark. But good morning, everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. I'm Bree Boxdollar from EPA out of the Denver office. Just a couple of updates that we have is, you know, over the course of obviously being kind of stuck at home and things, we're trying to work on some of our outreach planning for the upcoming year. Right now, obviously, we don't have the crystal ball as far as what our travel and, you know, options will look like. But, you know, our biggest concern, and I know that's been very common with a lot of the states, is, you know, the worry of CERC's kind of, or I'm sorry, of LEPC's kind of falling off since they're not able to meet and conduct some of those same types of meetings. So, you know, certainly wanted to offer our assistance as far as any LEPC 101s for those LEPCs that are kind of starting to gear up again if they need kind of that initial assistance and then, you know, things to help them stay active. We're really trying to work on coming up with some ideas with tabletop exercises and to encourage some of those more, too. I know that can kind of garner some interest, and, you know, we want to tap into Mark's expertise with some of those things. We're also hope to start working more with our on-scene coordinators as they look at their area contingency plans. And, you know, if we go up and travel, try to do a one-stop shop as far as meeting with the LEPCs, looking at the contingency plan and those type of things too. So just kind of throwing that out there. Of course, if there's any assistance that's needed, you know, definitely don't hesitate to let us know. From the headquarters side, I'm on the work group for that currently. We're working on finalizing an LEPC handbook. I know there's many versions and some states have their own versions. So we're trying to compile a lot of those things into kind of a one-stop shop and, you know, things that have worked well for other areas, you know, definitely want to pass on that information. So, you know, I'm pushing hard to encourage easy readability because I know no one wants to look at a 300-page document. So, you know, trying to make sure it's easy to digest and those type of things. So stay tuned for that. Also coming out of headquarters is EPCRA for the elected official. They're looking to make that into kind of a YouTube type movie. So, you know, just as there are new mayors or commissioners, decision makers that come through, you know, this would be something for EMs or, you know, people from the CERC or LEPCs to just kind of show a little bit of high-level background of, hey, why our jobs are so important, why we need the funding and the support, and to keep that going. So we're hoping, again, to get on that soon. Obviously, everything moves at glacial pace with government, so, you know, I'll definitely pass that on as soon as I hear it. Wanted to, you know, just pass on, we had our Western States CERC-TURC meeting at the end of January and really appreciate the participation. We had wonderful participation with Region 8, you know, and I know it's really interesting that the other regions really look to us at Region 8 as almost, you know, kind of leaders with how we do things, how we make things happen. And, you know, I greatly appreciate those that participated and, you know, were able to make the best of it, even though it was in a virtual setting. So hopefully, fingers crossed, we can be able to do this in person next year in Region 10. So obviously with the crystal ball, we'll see how that goes. But just wanted to, you know, send our appreciation out with that. Some of the bigger news is that our supervisor, Kathy Atencio, is retiring as of May 1st. She has put in 30 years as a public health service officer and is very sad for us, but for her, moving on to greener pastures. So Stephen Merritt is announced as her replacement. I don't know, as far as right now, I don't think he has a very specific start date, so we're trying to work over the transition. But Steve is actually a former OSC. He's currently in our oil program, so we certainly anticipate a very smooth transition as he's very familiar with our program and what all comes from it. So we're very excited to have him on, but obviously we'll miss Kathy greatly. So, you know, feel free to pass on your well wishes and things like that. And then lastly, and we're still kind of in the planning processes, but Region 9, which is out of California, it's headquartered out of San Francisco, they're actually holding a tribal training webinar, which is, you know, kind of the basic emergency planning and preparedness going over EPCRA and some of their resources. They invited us with Region 8 if we wanted to forward that on to any of our tribal folks to be a part of that. And, you know, just depending on the interest, that's something and if we need to kind of rehash that in Region 8, we'll certainly do so. So just to give you all a heads up that we'll be sending out the invitation to our tribal partners, hopefully within the next couple weeks. That's scheduled for May 20th. So, you know, as if there's interest even on the state side, you know, as we kind of go into planning and things, you know, certainly let us know with that. I believe that's all I had. Mark, is there anything else that you had to add?
Just real quick, the only other thing that I've got to add is we hope to be sending out the quarterly newsletter here in April in the next week or so. If anybody on the South Dakota CERC would like to be on that, that's not currently on that, I'll put my email address in the comment section, and I can certainly get you signed up to receive that newsletter. Thanks, Bree. That's it.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Bree. Thank you, Mark. Our partners at the EPA are always awesome to work with. I know Kelsey and Trish and I, and I apologize if I'm excluding others, but I distinctly remember seeing all of us on the Western States Conference, and for having it being done in a virtual environment, it was informative and well worth the time to attend, and certainly looking forward to an in-person event as conditions allow. Moving on, Fran, are you still with us from CISA?
I sure am, and thank you for allowing me to give you guys some updates. And I do have to second your comments, Dustin, about how awesome you guys are and integrated into our programs. You show up and you participate, and it always makes me feel good when I see our Region 8 states there and fully participatory in the process. I mean, I think the programs are only as good as the people who show up to enjoy them. So thank you all for making that extra effort. It helps all of us when you're there. We've had a busy time during the COVID pandemic, you know, from our perspective, even though our inspections were put on delay, the in-person inspections for a few months. Our inspectors are right back out there. Their only real restriction right now is they can't fly. Our federal guidance is we're not allowing them to fly. But we do have inspectors in all of the states. So, you know, if they are able to drive and they can do an extra overnight in a hotel, that's how we're handling it. So we're back up and running. So right now, let me give you a couple of updated statistics. We have broken the 100,000 mark for top screens, which is really exciting. We have about 105,500 top screens completed since the inception of the program. So we're really out there touching bases with folks as they top screen in, top screen out, and new facilities come on board. Nationally, we generally sit around 3,300 tiered facilities, and that's where we are right now at 3,282 tiered facilities. Within Region 8, we sit at 103 tiered facilities, and within South Dakota, we have 6 tiered facilities, no tier ones or tier twos, 4 tier threes, and 2 tier fours. And a big thank you for sharing the South Dakota Tier 2 database. It really was a year-long process for a number of reasons to get through that whole list of facilities. We are very careful about the process. We don't want to be bothering people unnecessarily. We do a thorough investigation before we're pretty sure that the facility is going to meet the standard, double check, and all of that. But out of the 2,000 or so facilities that we reviewed, we identified 57 facilities that had our chemicals of interest at the screening threshold quantity. And from that, 23 top screens were required and filed, and one additional Tier 4 facility was identified. And why you might see a discrepancy is oftentimes what happens is when we talk to these facilities, they don't realize that some simple adjustments will have them not covered by the standard, for example, lowering the current inventory of whatever the chemical is. That also lowers their risk to the community. And oftentimes they're keeping way more on site than they need to. And that's usually the reason why we see folks identified in a tier two who then are not required to file. So that's all good news for all of us. During the last few months, we did have that advance notice of proposed new rulemaking for the removal of certain explosive chemicals from the CFAX Appendix A. And these are the 41 Division 1.1 Class 1 explosives. And the reason for this is that there's overlap between our regulation and ATF. We're trying to not overburden facilities with duplicating requirements. And so this was put out there for comments. We did receive 80 comments back, most of which would be characterized as a letter writing campaign with people supporting the removal of those 41 chemicals from an administrative perspective. But we did have a few that actually took the time to compare the two standards, and they really are not identical. And probably the biggest delta is the requirements in CFATS for cybersecurity controls, and that is not there with ATF, and also the emergency preparedness requirements. So the next step with that is our staff at headquarters has to compile all the comments, provide responses back to Congress on this, and it will go back out again for proposed rulemaking, depending on the kinds of conversations that happen between GAO and Congress. So that's where that's at. The voluntary program is moving forward, as I mentioned last time. Just a quick reminder of what that is. We recognize that we have a lot of expertise on staff, and we recognize that 3,300 facilities is just the tip of the iceberg of the risk with chemical security. And just because a facility doesn't tier in, it doesn't mean that there are no risk for your community. So what we want to do is provide the expertise without the regulation to facilities that don't tier in. Perhaps they've done a top screen and they don't top screen in, but they could provide a significant risk to the community. They're just not considered high risk. And so the kinds of products that we're working on are things like the pandemic guide that's already been released. There is a Secure Your Chemicals Guide, which is based off of the RBPS, but written in plain language, as Bree alluded to, with the kind of guidance documents that they're developing as well. We're trying to keep these tools short and easy to use, checklist formats. And they go through multiple layers of review. We have an internal review, and then they have to go to stakeholder reviews to the different chemical groups that we work with on a regular basis to ensure that everyone is okay with the tool as we put them together. We're anticipating the tools will be released in the summer, the majority of them. And in addition to that, one of the working groups on this project is looking at providing what I would call the inspector view from more of an advice perspective, an advisory perspective. So, for example, if a facility felt they wanted to increase their security posture and they're really not sure how to do that and what would give them the most bang for the buck, our CSIs, or chemical security inspectors, would then be allowed to go to the facility and just provide them that type of advice. That will take a little bit of time to get through. There are some legal issues that we have to work through with that, and that may take longer than the summer, but that's part of the program. The other piece of the voluntary program is the incentivization program. So we're looking at developing a gold standard. So what would be similar in the chemical world to this would be, say, the FireWise program in the fire community, where people voluntarily adopt standards, which in the long run would then helps them lower their insurance profile You know, it's worked really well without it being regulatory. I've seen that happen here in my own community, where the homes that are part of FireWise communities are assessed differently by the insurance industry. And also, you know, just I think of a similarity with the Joint Commission standards that are out there for hospitals and healthcare facilities. That started out as an organization that was developing voluntary standards many, many moons ago. But it got the attention of the regulatory community, and they said, we're not going to redevelop these standards. These are great standards that we need to adopt. And so you see that these gold standards that are voluntary then often offer a long-term benefit for folks as being the gold standard. And I think it's a pride issue as well. I think that oftentimes facilities that take a lot of pride in their safety and security programs want to be recognized for that. So that's what that program is about. That also will be more of a long-term program. We're getting like monthly updates on, you know, how that is going. I think you are going to hear more in the middle of the summer when we see the release of some of these simpler tools, where they're going with that, what the official name will be, and how they will tier in people to this structure of best practices that they're developing along with the standard. There's also a chemical security awareness training that we partnered with FEMA that has been released on their website. It really is targeting the facility operational folks. This is not an in-depth security awareness training. It's very easy to understand. I took it myself. I thought, you know, it was a great type of training for the average chemical facility, particularly the facilities in South Dakota that may be in the Tier 2 program, but not necessarily the CFETS program. So I will send Kelsey the links. I'll actually send her a copy of my notes from what I'm briefing you guys off of that will have the links to the training and be able to go right in offer the links out to folks who might find this something they'd be interested in. And the last two topics I want to talk about are really the risk and threat issues that we see happening around our chemical facilities. The big ones are the recent cyber attacks. And these cyber attacks are not just a concern for your chemical facilities, but clearly for all public agencies as well. So there's been a huge uptick in ransomware. Every day I'm in morning briefings where I'm hearing there's been another major ransomware attack. The areas that have been targeted most in the last few months have been water and wastewater facilities, healthcare and biotechnology, chemical facilities, and right here in Colorado, Coors Brewery was attacked. It actually hit the news. So you know, this is something that we're all very concerned about. And our folks at CISA, you know, we have the cybersecurity advisors who are great resources to assist with this. And also with the notes that I'm going to provide is the links to get those additional resources if your facilities are ever attacked by something like this. The SolarWinds Orion hack has been in the news almost every day. This was a huge attack and is a Russian hack. And they sat on our networks for at least a year now is what I'm hearing. And they were considered an advanced persistent threat, just hanging out, gathering whatever data they felt would be useful for them. So, you know, just a wake-up call for all of us about having those secure networks to keep the bad guys out. And the last big one was the Microsoft Exchange server. Now, I mean, most public entities use Microsoft, and so this was a big, big deal for all of us. I'll be providing a link back to our website to be able to get free resources to deal with this if any of your partners are having to deal with being hacked by that. This was a Chinese attack. It's a group called Hafnium that sponsored this big attack. And then lastly, there's been a huge increase in pre-operational and surveillance activities. Particularly, there was a year-long project on putting together the data from Louisiana. They've been heavily targeted, and I know that's Louisiana. It's not here, but it's a big harbinger of what could be coming for the rest of the United States, and there was the information came from the FBI. So there were 90 security breaches, 73 incidents involving photography, and 53 drone sightings. So these are the types of things that we get concerned about with our chemical facilities, and everywhere, real honestly. So the FBI does assess that these incidents are going to continue and are going to increase. So I just want to get that information out there as well for you guys, just to be aware of what the bad guys are looking to do, and that we are concerned about it as well. And with that, I'll turn it over for questions.
All right. So, and I was remiss. I didn't open the floor for questions for Bree or Mark from EPA. But at this time, I've got two things. One, I'd like to open the floor for questions for our federal partners, CISA and EPA. And then the second is I have to beg my leave. I have another engagement. So I'm going to hand the virtual gavel over to Doug Hinkle from the Fire Marshal's office. He's willing to bear that burden for the remainder of the meeting. So, Doug, I'm going to hand the rest of the agenda off to you. And again, I beg everyone's pardon. I'm going to step away, but right now the floor is certainly open to questions from our federal partners.
I guess if we don't have any questions and stuff, I appreciate the information. I guess from here on, I guess we'll move into, and I know Willett kind of jumped through the agenda that I have a little bit. I guess we can go into the HMEP grants training and planning report.
Thanks, Doug. This is Carrie Lightholt with OEM. I'm sitting in for Rhett Howard to give the report. Most of you or should have received the report that Rhett did send to Kelsey. I'm not going to reread everything, but it does give you the amount spent and the total monies remaining for both the 19 and the 20 grant. And we are currently waiting approval for the 2021 grant. And as soon as we get that, I'm sure Rhett will keep you all informed about that. That's all I have.
Okay. I guess with that, do we have a motion and a second to accept the grant report from HMEP?
Doug, usually there's nothing to vote on for the HMEP grants.
Okay. I guess moving on from that, then we got the industry workshops. Or did you already talk about that?
Doug, actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you the updated agenda. I'm sorry, I did not realize that you didn't have one. That way we can kind of stay on track with what we've got here.
Okay, yeah, because the one I got and stuff come with the meeting announcement.
What we should have next is the regional hazmat team update. And Homeland Security is not on the phone with us right now, but I did get a email from John stating what their updates are. And the South Dakota Task Force 1 did not respond to any hazmat or USAR emergent events since the last CERC meeting. The hazmat training trailer is currently in Sioux Falls. Their training is slowly starting to return to normal, and there will be four departments together for a training exercise and standby during the Sturgis rally again this year. And that was the only update that we had for the regional hazmat team.
Okay. Since we already had HMEP, I guess we'll go into the Tier 2 report submittals. Kelsey?
So as a reminder, the Tier 2 report are reports facilities that store substances are required to file on an annual basis. The reporting threshold for most of those substances is 10,000 pounds, but there is a lower threshold for certain substances. The reason facilities are supposed to report is to ensure planners, responders, and the general public know what is stored in the local community. The Tier 2 reporting deadline was March 1st, 2021. This year, it seemed like there was a pretty steady flow for reports coming in since the first of the year. As of today, we have received reports from 1,659 facilities. There are still a number of facilities that have not submitted their reports yet, and I am currently in the process of contacting those facilities and reminding them to get their reports in since the reporting deadline has passed. We do offer summarized Tier 2 data available to the general public online, and detailed data, including copies of the reports, is available to planners and first responders within our password-protected website. In the beginning of May, we will begin receiving the toxic release inventory reports, so I will give another update on those at the June CERC meeting. And that is all I have for the Tier 2 reports.
Any questions on the Tier 2 reports? Seeing none, we'll go to the legislative update with Trish.
Thank you, Doug. Good morning, everyone. This is Trish with the South Dakota Department of Environment and Natural Resources. As in previous years, I'm going to give you a brief legislative update. Yesterday was the last day of session, so the 2021 legislative session is now over. For my CERC update this year, just as I do every year, I'm going to try to concentrate on bills that are in some way CERC or DENR related. But I will also mention a couple of other bills that you just might find interesting. If anyone wants more information about any of the bills I mentioned today, or if you just want to look at all this year's session bills, take a look at the 2021 legislative session webpage. Just go to southdakotalegislature.gov/session. Again, that's southdakotalegislature.gov/session, and the website address is up there on the screen right now. I do encourage you to look through this year's bills, because there were a number of really interesting bills that I'm not going to talk about today, but they were interesting, so you might enjoy looking at them. Okay, by my rough, not official count, there were 478 bills introduced during the 2020 session, 283 of those being House bills and 195 being Senate bills. Again, that's not an official number. I'm going to start today with a resolution that was of interest to a lot of the citizens of South Dakota and to Department of Environment and Natural Resources. Senate Resolution of Disapproval 901. This resolution proposed to disapprove of Executive Order 2021-03. For anyone who hasn't heard, on January 19th, 2021, Governor Noem signed Executive Order Number 2021-03. With that order, the governor merged the Department of Environment and Natural Resources and the Department of Agriculture into one department called the Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources. The purpose of the merger is simply to streamline regulatory oversight and to improve efficiency of the agencies. And there are some similar regulatory programs in the two departments. The point of the Senate resolution was to block the merger, and the resolution failed on March 8th, so the merger of the two departments will officially go into effect on April 19th, 2021. Moving on, House Bill 1029 was an act to require a permit to conduct mining operations for certain ore milling facilities. The purpose of this bill was to clarify the definition of a mining operation so we can ensure that any standalone chemical or milling activity is subject to the same environmental safeguards as those at a similar milling activity at an existing mine. This bill was signed by the governor on March 3rd. House Bill 1039 was an act to make an appropriation for costs related to the suppression of wildfires in the state and to declare an emergency. And this bill simply provided funding for wildland fire, for fire management suppression activities. It was like $973,000. And that bill was signed by the governor on March 21st. House Bill 1064 made an appropriation for the establishment of peer support and critical incident stress management training for first responder organizations. I'm not very familiar with this bill, but it looks like the Office of the Attorney General will administer a program that funds first responder peer support programs. And those programs would be for volunteers or professionals in law enforcement, fire suppression, emergency medical services, including emergency medical technicians and paramedics, and emergency dispatch service organizations. For more information about that bill or the program, I'm sure you would need to talk to the Office of the Attorney General because, like I said, I do not know a whole lot about that. This bill was signed by the governor on March 25th. House Bill 1265 was an act to make an appropriation for the improvement of the radio system in South Dakota and to declare an emergency. The bill appropriated $800,000 for reimbursing costs associated with the expansion of radio coverage in the Black Hills through the addition of radio tower sites. This bill was signed by the governor on March 25th. Senate Bill 52. This one was an act to revise the permit duration for certain concentrated animal feeding operations. I'm mentioning this one just because it's of interest to the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. That bill changed the length of time a state-issued water pollution control permit for a confined animal feeding operation, or CAFO, it changed that permit duration from 5 years to 10 years. No permit conditions were relaxed. The bill simply lengthened the effective life of the permit. And this bill was signed by the governor on February 24th. And finally, Senate Bill 99. This bill authorized the Department of Agriculture to contract for the construction of a livestock and equestrian complex at the state fair. This past fall, I think it was October, the beef complex at the state fairground burned down. It was a total loss. And this was a very large building at the fairgrounds that was used a lot during the fair and after, or, you know, not during the fair time. Other organizations would use the building because it had a lot of space for horse shows and exhibits and 4-H rodeo, that type of thing. This bill appropriated $12 million in general funds and $8 million in other funds for the construction of a new facility. And the plan is to build a 200,000 square foot structure with a footprint that encompasses the site of the beef complex and the open class sheep barn, which, while it did not burn down, was in really bad shape. The bill was signed by the governor on March 21st. And that concludes my legislative update.
Thank you, Trish. Any questions? Hearing none, I will open it up for any public comments. Any public comments? Hearing none, is there any other business that needs to be brought before, sir?
This is Kelsey. Our next CERC meeting is scheduled for June 29th. We will do it the same way as we have done these ones in the past, over DDN and Teams. If anybody wants to come sit in the training center here in the FOSS building, they are welcome to. That meeting will be on a Tuesday at 10 o'clock.
Any other business? I guess that's all that we had on the agenda and stuff. I guess do we have a motion to adjourn then?
So moved. McIntosh.
Second, Leash.
Okay, any discussion? I guess roll call vote.
Humphrey?
Aye.
Leash?
Aye.
McIntosh? Aye.
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 Pitsy?
Aye.
Hinkle?
Aye. That concludes the meeting. It's adjourned. Thanks, everybody.